Hi, this is David Russell. Welcome to episode 43 of the No Bad Bosses podcast. And today's episode is sponsored by Dave's Charm School. You've got to have soft skills. You've got to be able to get along with people. You've got to be able to avoid conflict. Once you're in it, get out of it safely without wounding people. So these things like empathy, character, how to do service calls, how to work with other people, and one of our clients' favorite, business etiquette. How do you like that? 30 different tips on how to dine professionally with others without offending them. Anyway, check it out. Visit managetowin.com/charmschool, or you can go to davescharmschool.com. Either way, learn more, try it out, 14 days free. My guest today is Marcus Bigelow of Convene. Marcus has been with us before. Today, you're going to get awesome tips on how to have a family business. How do you succeed the business to others? And for those of you who are really clued into what's going on in the conversation, you're going to see, oh, wow, that's a family thing, but I could do that with all my employees, or at least to a certain extent. Don't miss it. We're diving in about 30, 35 minutes of a lot of gems here for you. Okay, we're live. Marcus, welcome back to No Bad Bosses. So for those in the audience who may not know you, may not have caught our prior talks, why don't you do an intro? I love your background, and you're not only coaching, but you're an entrepreneur yourself, and you know, you got it all going on. So I'm looking forward to your comments today.
I don't know if I have it all going on or I just have a lot of balls in the air, but I do have a full and active life. Currently, I'm a Convene chair, which is a peer-to-peer advisory group for Christian CEOs and business owners. And I have about 15 CEOs that I coach. I also am in the process of starting a senior assisted living home with my daughter. I think we're going to call it Cherry and Dad. And I think that's going to be a fun thing. It's kind of a legacy business. I'm probably 5 years away from retiring, and I'd like to leave her set up to do something significant for a long while. I also do some consulting with a group called Leadership One that does family business succession strategies and transition strategies. And that's a huge passion of mine, is to see wealth passed from one generation to the next, and not more than wealth, businesses pass from one generation to the next. The sad thing is that 30% or less make it from generation one to generation two, 10% make it from generation two to generation three, and 3% make it beyond generation three. And so I just saw some statistics that there's 270,000 businesses that are going to change hands this year across the world. And it'll be somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 trillion worth of assets passed. And if only 30% of those make it, that means approximately $35 trillion will be in a state of disruption. And all those families, all the employees, all the customers, all the suppliers will be in a state of transition and flux, and that just shouldn't be.
Hey, this No Bad Bosses podcast is going to be like my leadership therapy with you, since, you know, Jeff, my son, works with me. And I'm kind of curious, what are the key attributes that make that successful? I mean, one of the things that struck me when I'm reading the Bible is correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you're even more knowledgeable about that book than I am, but most of the time there's not a good succession.
In the Bible has real human beings just like every place else and portrays them with all their warts. And you're right, there's not a lot of good transitions in the Bible, because they're human beings. There's an interesting phrase I came across called emotional economics. And three Nobel Prizes in the last 20 years have been awarded in economics for theses that said there are no such things as purely economic decisions. They're all emotional. And emotions always affects money, and money always affects emotions. And I just recently came across a study. I did a presentation a couple of weeks ago at a family business conference that 42% of family transitions fail because of emotional turbulence in the family. And another 17% fail because of lack of preparation of the next generation. And if you then add 30% that make it to that, between 5 and 7% fail due to lack of legal planning, tax planning, all that kind of stuff. It all has to do with family dynamics in the family business setting. And since 90% approximately of businesses have some major family connection, it's huge.
So, what can you give us? What are the key parameters of a successful family business? How does that get structured? How do you manage that? I mean, I don't want to. I shouldn't say anything more. I'm already said too much. But
well, it's I think number one is you start early. And you have full disclosure to family early on. I see so many families where the kids really don't have any idea what's really going on in the company. And all of a sudden dad says, hey, you're going to take over this company. And the daughter or the son says, oh, no, I'm not. I don't want any part of that. I was with a family not too long ago that the two of the kids came in and said, here's $5 million of stock you've given us. We're giving it back to you because we want out. And that's, you know, that's at age 60, maybe 65, that the dad is hearing this. And suddenly his plans are in shambles. Yeah. I think it's all the way around. It's the perfect storm. Every family has some dysfunction. And then in a family business, you add power, you add greed, you add sibling rivalry, you add a parent often who is overcommitted to the business and has kind of put the family on hold while they started it up because it's an all-consuming kind of a thing. Yeah. And it's the perfect storm. I mean, it's rife for a dysfunction. Given the other thing that's interesting, there was a study done back in the 60s of about 700 families in, or 700 businesses in the Midwest. And of those 700 families, the vast majority were started by people who were trying to prove to their dad that they were better than the dad thought. And they were trying to make a name for themselves. They were trying to show their dad they were better than he was giving them credit for. And the downside of that is that that then becomes their source of value, and they can't let go. And one of the metaphors, there's four metaphors that they use for the senior, the first generation or second generation leader letting go. One is the king. You're going to carry me out in a box. And until then, I'm going to be king. Another is the general, like MacArthur, that I shall return. And oftentimes what happens, especially if it's a thing where the family is trying to, or the son is trying to prove to his dad that it's worthwhile, is they will set up these lose-lose situations so that they can ride back in on their white horse and save the day, and thereby reaffirm their value that they have to be there, or the business will fail. And I have seen that. I've seen it three or four times in the last couple of years, with great pain to all concerned. I mean, it causes the heirs and the next generation great pain, but it also causes the father great pain. Yeah. Because even though he's the one causing it all, it still feels bad.
So. Is it intentional or is it subconscious?
I think on my good days, I think it's subconscious. On my bad days, sometimes I think some of it's intentional. But I think most of the time it's subconscious. That they're trying to prove that they're, I mean, they're just trying to take care of their own self-image. And that's hard. Yeah. I had a, when I pastored 35 years ago, I had a man in my congregation who was probably the best machinist in a 3-county area. And he worked with his dad, who was a miserable person who would never tell him that he was good enough or that he was proud of him.
Yeah.
And I saw this guy work himself into a heart attack and trying to get his dad's approval. So one of the things that I think really makes a difference is passing on a blessing to the next generation. It's from, you know, Jewish literature, the story of Jacob and Esau, and Jacob comes in and steals his dad's blessing. And when Esau comes in, he says, "Dad, isn't there anything left for me?" And instinctively, we have to have our father's blessing. And when we don't have it, we spend our life trying to fill it with other things. So the power of giving a child a blessing is huge.
Wow.
That's my take.
Okay. Well, so you had 4 metaphors. You went through 2 of them. What are the other 2?
One is the governor who serves for a period of time and then just steps out and walks away. And that's not too bad of a metaphor. The best one is probably the senior statesman, the Benjamin Franklin, who is willing to, doesn't need to be center stage, doesn't need to be president, doesn't need, but he's always there to help. And he comes, the person in this one comes back and he still lends his support to his son or his daughter. He still is there when he needs. And that's my favorite metaphor, is the senior statesman. And there's a whole bunch of reasons why that doesn't happen. But if we could make that as one of the metaphors of our lives, then I want to be the senior statesman. There's an interesting stat that says if somebody doesn't lead by the time they're 70, it's going to be trouble. And the statistics to back that up are pretty good. They're not right on the tip of my tongue, but if a dad doesn't lead, when we're seeing more and more of parents who are, you know, we're not worn out like we were at 70 before, you know, our folks generation and their folks generation, by the time you got to 70, you were old. And now I just saw, the World Health Organization 2 days ago defined 60 to 80 as middle age. My wife liked that because we just turned, you know, I'm 66. And so we decided that we like that rather than being seniors. You don't get to be called a senior till you're 80 anymore. And I think that's also taking place in it's affecting the workplace, and dads are staying longer in the business. Recently a father who was 80 said, "I'm turning it over to you, son." And he goes, "No, you're not. I'm retiring next year." And my children already have careers of their own. They're not going to do this. And so I think you've got to make plans to leave early, you know, early, 65, 70, or at least give substantial promotion and sharing of power to the next generation if you're going to have a successful transition.
Well,
go ahead.
I just want to comment on the statesman metaphor, particularly when I think of Benjamin Franklin. I think of someone who probably was very politically astute and had a lot of political acumen. So he knew how to work with people who were for him or against him and understand, you know, how people work together, so could navigate those waters. But I also have the impression that his approach would have been an encouraging one.
And, yeah.
Yeah. So when you're talking about that statesman piece, there's kind of a balance between the two, where they have the acumen, but also they can be sincerely encouraging to the child.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Now, another question I have for you is, you said start early. So as far as informing them fully about the business and what's going on, what your thoughts are, that type of thing, are you talking about in some instances where you would talk with your kids when they might still be in their teens and start to engage them with different aspects of the business and teach them? I remember years ago, I was at Bass Lake and I started chatting with the guy who ran the boat shop. And he mentioned, I told him I was doing leadership, and he said, oh yeah. He said, well, I'll give you a tip. And he said, you notice I got all these young people, you know, working for me, high school, college age, whatever. And he said, one of the things I always look for is I look for kids who have worked in their family business, because they have a totally different understanding of the business, because typically they've been taught the value of hard work, the importance of quality, you know, understanding profit, whatever it might be. So I'm kind of curious, when you're recommending, you know, family business transfer, how early do you start informing
the family? I think at the latest 14.
Oh, wow.
So I just, at this family generations conference that I spoke at, I asked Bill and Jenny Carrier from Carrier Farms up in Northern California to come and share. And Carrier Farms is in their fifth generation. They're five generations ago, they migrated here from Canada, from Quebec. And they have now passed it successfully to five generations. There's multiple family lines of those, from those original heirs, original founders, that are still involved in the business, and it is as harmonious as you could possibly imagine. They've done a couple things. They formed a family council, which is really important, I think, where you talk. The family council is about family business, but it also has some relationship to the business as well. But it's more about how do we maintain family relationships. Then there's a board, a governing board, that people come from the family council and are chosen to be a part of the governing board. But they do something that's really interesting. They do a family camp, Carrier Farms camp, every year. And as early as 5 years old, these kids can come and they take them through the walnut hulling process. They have a big garden that they then set up a stand, and the kids have to sell produce in the stand. They walk them through the harvest equipment. But then as they get older, when they get to be 16, 17, they walk them and they teach them about finances. They teach them about investing. It's a week-long camp that every summer, 35, 40 cousins come together, build relationships with one another, so there's some love between the cousins and they're not estranged. And it gives them a good, solid foundation for their family harmony. The other thing they ask them to do is all of them have to go out and work outside the family business for at least 2 years, and preferably 4 years, before they can come back and work in the business. And then they are interviewed by a family board, a non-family board, who interviews them to say, do you really have the skills necessary to do the job that you're applying for? No one gets handed a job. They may get first notice that a job is coming due, but no one gets handed a job. And so there's no entitlement. There's no spoiled brats. Which is often the case in family businesses. It's not just the fathers and mothers that cause this thing. It's also the sons and daughters who think, well, I have the right last name, therefore I don't have to work hard, or I don't have to pay my dues. And so they require them to go out and work someplace else for at least 2 years, and require them to get a degree in business if they want to, or agribusiness if they want to come back and work in the family business at more than just a laborer kind of a position. So I think that they have done it as well as almost anybody that I have seen. Because he shared with 125 people in this conference, I felt like I could at least share his, you know, some of their story, but they just do a great job of it. There's other ones that would be similar. The folks that own the nugget markets have done a great job of passing it on through, I think they're in their third generation now, and have maintained family harmony. There's probably five or six others that I could point to that have done an outstanding job of training up the next generation, starting early, requiring them to go out and get help someplace, you know, get a job someplace else, learn something, and then come back and add value to the business.
Yeah, you know, I hear that, and it's like, oh yeah, that's so logical. And what appeals to me is, you know, my three strands leadership, the first strand is systematic power. And what they've done is they've really figured out the system and they stay true to the system. And it makes so much sense how they balance it. And I love the way that they do the things for the younger kids. I mean, I've said for decades, what would our nation be like if we taught kids starting in middle school, you know, how to work together as a team, attributes of leadership, conflict management, you know, how do you avoid conflict? What do you do when you're in it? You know, how do you delegate work effectively? How do you set clear, measurable goals? All these different aspects of things that would really help them in life, both personally and professionally. And that's what they're doing through a lot of that, you know, how to manage a budget and with, you know, a profit and loss type of thing, personally and professionally. I mean, that's huge.
So there's a couple of things that people, business owners can do right now that is worthwhile, I think. Number one is, one of the biggest tripping points in the passing along the family business is that the parents have no financial plan to provide for their support. And so they just keep working because they need to keep working in order to have enough money to live. And yeah. So parents need to have some kind of a way that they can step out of the business and still be supported in the manner in which they would like to be accustomed. And so early financial planning by the parents is a must, so that there is a way they can gracefully step out and not become a burden to their children. A second thing that we have done for the past 4 or 5 years is every year we take a family vacation together with all of our daughters and their husbands. We have 3 daughters and their husbands and now 8 grandkids, 7 grandkids, excuse me. I keep hoping for an 8th, but 7 grandkids. And at one point during the last part of our vacation, we'll call all the family together and my wife and I will go around the room and say, Kara, you have a great value and we see these qualities in you. And we believe that that's really what makes your family a success. Patrick is her husband. We see these qualities in you. And then we go down through each of the grandkids and we picture a future for them. We impart value to them, or, you know, impart's not the right word. They have the value. We recognize the values that are the good that is in their lives. The first time it was really uncomfortable. I mean, for us and for them, but now I don't think they'd want to miss it because there's not a lot of times that we get an unfiltered blessing from somebody. And as parents, we need to do that on a regular basis. The Jewish Sabbath begins on a Friday, every Friday night with the father blessing his kids. It's no wonder in my way of thinking that so many Jewish businessmen are so successful because they've grown up receiving a blessing, having the future, a positive future pictured for them every week. Well, that's pretty powerful when you think about training a kid up in the way he ought to go, kind of a thing. So I think those two things, do your financial planning so that you can step out when you want to step out, And give your family a blessing. And then probably the other thing is adopt a metaphor for your leadership regarding the next generation that's a positive one, not you're going to carry me out in a box.
Yeah, no, I like it. I mean, it's I can see why it makes such a difference. And we're not trained that way. It's no. The approach is systematic. The approach values each person. And by valuing each person, it helps them really pursue a life that's more meaningful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of being, you know, chasing the wound, you mentioned chasing the wound of I'm not good enough.
Yeah. And sometimes we have to also say, kids, you're not going to want to stay in this business. And sometimes it's worth, I don't think it's bad if a business gets sold and the wealth is passed on. Well, when they talk about these, you know, 70% of the business is failing, there is an involuntary surrendering of assets in that failed transition. That's not healthy. Somebody's losing. And so if it's a planned sale or a bringing in a non-family president, CEO, or whatever, I think that's pretty healthy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to, the son or the daughter doesn't have to become the next president.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I think that's great. Any closing thoughts on this? I mean, this is kind of been jam packed with family business news, from you. And I think it's great. And I think quite frankly, a lot of what you're teaching, am I correct, Marcus? Couldn't this also transition over to a lot of the things you should do with any employee?
Sure. Picturing picturing a positive future, recognizing the value of each employee that we have, all of that has incredible value in creating motivation. I'm just currently working through a book called Mastering Trust. No, excuse me, The Trust Factor by Paul Zak. And his first principle of building trust is ovation, that people who build quality organizations are always applauding and recognizing the value of what their employees are doing. My favorite on that is Bob Chapman from Barry Waymuller. He's got a YouTube video called Greatness, I believe it is. Every month they recognize one employee who's the peers have chosen as the employee of the month. And, the peers come and they have to give reasons why they're the employee of the month. And, then they bring they shut the whole company down for an hour. They bring everybody to the thing. And then they also bring in the employee's family, his parents. And they have this award ceremony, and the award is they get to drive a sports car for a week. They bought several bright yellow sports cars. I think they have 60 companies that they have bought over the last 40 years. And one of the things that Bob Chapman says is that often the first place a person drives is to take it to go show his mom the car, and the fact that he was recognized as being an employee of the month. And so, we all need that kind of positive influence in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely agree. Well, anything else you want to add before we wrap up here, Marcus? I think this has been a great podcast.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be on with you, and that's obviously a subject that I'm passionate about. Everybody needs to work on their emotional intelligence. And that's part of what this all is about, is the emotional disturbances in family come because nobody teaches us about emotional intelligence. And when we're emotionally unintelligent, it causes problems, whether it's an employee, whether it's a vendor, whether it's a customer, whether it's our spouse, our children. there's probably, you know, that emotional intelligence is one of those things that can really make this thing fly a lot better. So.
Oh yeah. No, I definitely agree. And it took me till I was in my 50s to start to understand, you know, how I was motivated by past life experience, really, and start to deal with it and make some adjustments, still dealing with it, you know, type of thing. I'm not all the way there. It's quite a journey. So it's not like turning on a light bulb. You're like, oh, that's how I am. Bingo, I'll change.
Mm-hmm.
It's a process.
I hope one of these days to grow up.
Yeah. Well, I thank you so much. And anybody who wants to get a hold of Marcus, how can people get a hold of you, track you down if they want to do that?
My email is mbigelow@convenenow.com. You can find me on the Convene website, listed. That's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me is mbigelow@convenenow.com. And I'd be more than happy to talk with people who want to talk about succession planning and that kind of thing. Leadership One has written a book called The Tripping Points. It's the seven things that can kill a transition. And we'd probably be willing to share a copy of that as well.
So. Okay. Well, that's great. And if you're stuck, folks, you can always get a hold of me. You've got my contact info through this podcast, david@managetowin.com. Happy to connect you with Marcus. Long-term friend, and always enjoy getting together, Marcus. Thanks so much for squeezing us into your schedule.
Oh, my pleasure. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. I always enjoy talking with Marcus. It was great. I love diving in on family. Boy, it challenged me in a few areas, probably you too. Our next guest on No Bad Bosses is Michael Miller. Now, he is the Chief Compliance Officer for HealthNet Federal Services. I looked at his resume. I'm like, whoa, this guy's really got a lot going on. So I think you're really going to enjoy it. I think it's going to be new information. I wouldn't miss it. Watch for the podcast. Listen to it. Watch it. I'm sure there's going to be some gems there in another week or two. Thanks.